At my signal, unleash hell.
Am I not merciful?
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan B. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look under podcast, search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
He is risen. And I'm not talking about Sonny.
So
what is going on?
This is going to be a show of rankings.
Okay.
I believe that we are going to rank, I don't know, like 7 or 8 different things.
Oh, man.
And so I want to start out with my own ranking.
Oh, wow. Right from the gate.
We spent Holy Week in our house bopping around and watching services from different of our priest friends who were streaming their various
services.
Oh, Holy Thursday and Good Friday.
I don't like where this is
Easter
going.
Vigil. And so
Sonny, we'll get back to you in about 10 minutes.
And then after that,
we'll talk about Axis and Allies, and we'll get back to you in another 10 minutes. And after that, Civilization, we'll get back to you in 30.
Our friends, Father Conrad, Father Anthony, and Father Harrison, and I would now like to rank their Holy Week
services. This is what I was. I knew this is where this was headed. I knew this is not a good thing. This is how you get to hell. This is how you wind up in hell.
I think this is pretty straightforward how you rank it. You just look at the time on the video, and whatever the shortest one is wins.
Well, very quickly, Father Harrison, big advantage because he's doing it out of the Cathedral of St. Matthew. So the incense, and if I could just say between us, way more than 10 people inside.
Wait a minute, JVL. Father Harrison?
No, Father Conrad.
Oh, sorry.
Father Conrad. Father Anthony, working with other priests in his diocese out in Pittsburgh.
Sharapa.
Father Anthony Sharapa. The hair is getting a little bit out of control, not being allowed to go and get a cut and not doing it the way some of us do, where we just take
it's like he just came out of the desert.
And
after
Father,
40 days.
Father Harrison did a lovely mass and a high degree of difficulty because he's doing it by himself out in Canada. So if I was going to rank them, I would... You know what? They're all number one.
Oh,
look at that.
What a gem.
Father Harrison and Father Anthony are all number one in my book.
Wow.
Happy Easter, fellas.
It's kind of like a trinity.
God.
My priestly trinity. How are you guys? How was your Easter, Sonny?
What a ripoff.
Now, you were not able to be received into the church this Easter.
That's the only reason.
Yeah.
That was the only reason why.
I actually had a whole head dunking scheduled. And they couldn't do it.
I think that would have been the wrong church.
Sorry, now I got to go be a Jew.
Happy Passover. Sonny, I wanted to ask you, how's your buddy Michael Bean doing? You hanging out with him lately?
I get a lot of texts from Michael Bean. That's not a joke. That's an actual statement of fact.
Who starts the text? You or him? Or is it?
This all came about because I wanted to do a piece on Tombstone. I'm working at this website that the first big film that our studio made was starring Kurt Russell. We're all huge Tombstone fans here. I wanted to do like a Tombstone week. And weirdly, the easiest in I had was with Michael Bean. I contacted his live appearances agent and was like, hey, I have an idea for a story. I want like a first person piece with Michael Bean on the shooting of Tombstone at rebellermedia.com, where if you go and you sign up and use the promo code Subbeacon, that's 2 words, Subbeacon, you get 25% off or 20% off.
Wow. And I'm sorry, what's the address again?
Rebeller, if you go to rebellermedia.com, you can find it all there. But anyway, I like contacted his like live appearance agent and he put me in touch with Michael Bean's wife actually. And I started talking with her and then like yada, yada, yada. Long story short.
And I'm sorry, the agent says talk to the wife.
Well, it was no.
I don't want that guy as my agent.
He was being very responsible. He was being a go-between, but it was just like I was just like let me like it was easier for me just to talk to the family themselves. So it was, anyway, it was
15% is for spouses too. You get 15%.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, like we started chatting and I said, hey, I would really love a like first person piece about the making of Tombstone. I can like interview you, or, you know, we can sit down and I can send you questions or whatever. And he was like, actually, I have a writing partner. I'm looking to do some more writing. So why don't I just write like a first person piece about it? I was like, fantastic. That works perfectly for me. And like, long story short, we kind of went back and forth. He actually wrote another piece for us a little bit, a couple months back about Full Metal Jacket and Stanley Kubrick. They have a friend who was going to be the original Gunny, got kind of elbowed out of the way.
Yes. Out of the way by Army.
Is it an actor? Is it an actor Tim, that yeah, we know?
No. He's Tim Colseri, nice guy. But like he just
because he was, when Arlie was, Ermey, when, yeah, when Arlie Ermey visited us at the Standard, he would not say who it was that he had elbowed out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a tough business. It's a tough business. The acting industry is a tough business, and that role made Arlie Ermey's career. Mm-hmm. That made Arlie Ermey's career. So Tim Colseri is actually in Full Metal Jacket.
Exactly. What made his career was by being a badass in the U.S. Marine.
Well, right.
Okay.
But I mean,
the other career. You said Colseri was actually in Full Metal Jacket?
He's still actually in Full Metal Jacket. He's the helicopter gunner. So like, you know, the shot, it's like the first shot as they're in Vietnam, right?
And he's killing
shooting people in the fields, right? And he's like, you know, what's the trick? You if they run their VC, and if they don't run, they're well-disciplined VC, right? Like, anyway, it's a great little, he had a great little story. We actually published that at rebellermedia.com as well. But the Tombstone Week is a thing I've been working on for like 2 or 3 months now, and I'm very excited to actually get it out there. And I text with Michael Biehn sometimes, and I say, hey, I've got this thing for your story. Is this good? And hopefully we'll get, hopefully he will be interested in writing more pieces for us at rebellermedia.com.
Yeah. I want a piece about James Cameron. That's what I want.
It's funny. I don't want to divulge any, you know, confidence.
You're so high up there now, Sonny.
My Tombstone story is that our buddy, Larry Miller, do you know this story, Vic? Have I told you this? So on the set of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Larry did a one-day shoot on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang because he is the agent in the very early beginning, when they are at the auditions. Mm-hmm. And so he's on set for one day, and he and Val Kilmer and RDJ were sort of sitting around, you know, waiting for time. And all that he and Robert Downey Jr. wanted to do was talk with Val Kilmer about Tombstone.
Even Robert Downey Jr. Yeah,
Robert Downey Jr. just wanted to talk. All they wanted to do was talk about Doc Holliday and the role and everything. And he said that Kilmer was totally into it and just indulged them with every question. And the two of them nerded out very hardcore. Because everybody who is associated with Hollywood in any way reveres Tombstone. Right.
Yeah, it is
sort of underwhelming in the theaters.
It's a very strange movie because if you go and look at it now, it has this ridiculous cast, right? It has like obviously Kurt Russell, Bill Paxton, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott. But then on the other side of the coin, right, you have Michael Biehn, Powers Booth, Stephen Lang, John Corbett. Jason Priestley,
girlfriend
Dana Delaney, Charlton Heston is in this movie.
Yeah.
And it was funny, Michael Biehn in the piece that's coming out tomorrow, I guess today is when people will get this on Tuesday. But Michael Biehn had like a whole scene with Heston that got cut because the weird story about Tombstone is that it almost did not get finished. Being produced. So like the screenwriter, Kevin Jarry, I can't pronounce his name. He was the director as well and got replaced, I think 4 or 5 weeks into the shoot. Because things were falling behind exactly, but because the studio wasn't thrilled with what they were seeing. The investors weren't thrilled with what they were seeing. So like there is like a long running debate about who really directed Tombstone. Kevin Jari gets replaced by George P. Cosmatos. I can't pronounce his name either. And the third kind of wheel here is Kurt Russell, who is doing a lot of the actual like day to day behind the scenes. Like, all right, we're going to shoot this. We're going to shoot this. We're going to shoot this. He really muscled it through into being. So it's a really interesting story, and I'm really glad that we have Michael Biehn's first person perspective at rebellermedia.com about the making of Tombstone, which is one of the great, it has evolved into one of the great basic cable classics, but it is just compulsively watchable. Like if you just pop it on and watch it, it is like you go to the end. Because it's got so many great little scenes and set pieces.
The best modern Western.
I think it is.
I defy you to put Unforgiven above it.
I would not put Unforgiven above it. I would say that Open Range is a like kind of close second. I don't know that Open Range is better. But I would say Tombstone is the best. And one of the last really like pure modern Westerns, as opposed to the like revisionist Western, right? Which is what Unforgiven falls into. And Bone Tomahawk or, you know,
like 310 to Yuma. I mean,
even 310 to Yuma. Yeah. I mean, 310 to Yuma is close to being
a hero type.
Yeah. Or like Hostiles again, like kind of a revisionist Hostiles, Western.
That was a tough one.
But I'm a huge, enormous fan of this movie. I know lots and lots of people are. I hope everyone will enjoy reading this series. And it's been a fun piece to bring to the world.
Wonderful. Your Easter, though. Your Easter was great. It was a moving weekend for you. Here's your pop quiz. What happens on Good Friday?
What happens to me or to Jesus?
I mean, just what does Good Friday commemorate and mark? There was some debate, not to get too political, that some people in American culture might not actually know what good for. So like, you know, if you with exclamation marks wish somebody a happy Good Friday,
so
it's possible you don't know what Good Friday really is about.
Good Friday was when the actual crucifixion happened, or is that when the spear of destiny pierced his side? I don't remember, frankly.
Vic, it's happening. Victorino, how are you?
Wait, did I get it right?
Yeah, you got it right.
I'm sure because you watched
Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. I did watch
that documentary that was shot in real time.
Victorino, I have a question for you.
Yes, JVL. I shouldn't move my head back and forth because of the microphone here, so I apologize to listeners.
How did you get a Japanese armor unit into the Sudan?
You can cross over the Suez Canal.
Can I set this up for people? Vic sends me a picture of his Axis and Allies.
He didn't just
board.
Send it to you. He sent it to you and me. I didn't have any idea.
Lucky you, Sonny.
And Vic, of course, was playing the Axis. And the thing that jumped out at me was that all of Russia was under Japanese dominion. Mm-hmm. And it was, the Japanese had put armor in Africa, in the darkest heart of Central Africa.
Yeah, we went all the way down to South Africa, and it takes a while, but you got to get your tanks so you can get them down there.
But you ran them all the way across Asia and through the Suez Canal. You did not use transport.
So first and foremost, believe it or not, I'm playing. I didn't receive this. It was a gift from my son, of course. Was 1941 Axis and Allies. So this is a new addition. In 41, the U.S. still has a presence in Hawaii with battleships and stuff like that. So it's basically early December 1941. So it's right there on the brink. And so you have to get adjusted to that. Germany doesn't really have that big of a presence actually in North Africa. As much as they do in the 1942 Milton Bradley version. If you're the United States, the Pacific is so, it just takes forever to get there. It's not, I can see how Roosevelt was like, MacArthur, he'll just have to fend for himself. We're not going to get anybody over there. You know, let's focus on Europe first. And that's exactly what my son did, is he focused on Europe. So he played as the Axis for the first two times, and I played as the Allies. And I and I won. And I had told him, I said, I think that the odds are stacked against the Axis because you got 3 versus 2 and it's just, you know, it's one after the, you know, as soon as America is done, it's Russia again. It's just back and forth, back and forth. But then I happened to win. He was fighting. Not that it mattered to him, but I said, you're fighting like Westmoreland. I said, I'm fighting shock and awe. Cause he's like, do you really need all these pieces? I said, yes. The way I roll my dice. Absolutely. You need everything. You send people at me one at a time or aircraft one at a time. We're just, you know, it's a big mistake.
The best part about this, though, is that so Vix sends me a picture of his map and I go crazy. I'm like, whoa, this is amazing. And Vix's response over text is, yeah, but it's a little bit sad for me because, you know, it's the Japanese leading and the Germans aren't doing much.
What I really meant to say was it's unnerving. But you know what? As I was explaining, my son's like, how are you winning out? And I said, look, I'm 47 years old. Spent a lot of time reading these. I love military. I'm a World War II fanatic. I love strategy. You know what I am? In another life, JVL, I would have been like the military advisor in Braveheart, the one to the prince. You know, I'm skilled in the arts of war and military tactics. That guy.
So you're the one who gets thrown out the window.
You're the one who gets defenestrated. That's me. I have as much experience as he does.
Speaking of military tactics.
So anyway, that's my situation.
How was your Easter?
At home, it was fine. It was very nice. It was quiet too, obviously. But you know, I made a nice little rib roast. That always takes longer to cook than you think. And then I had a fair amount to drink, so I'm taking it easy today. I got a little something.
Is that Sambuca?
Close, Sonny. Very close. A little grappa for you. A little grappa for you. Oh. Watch this. Are you ready? I hope you enjoy. I wish our listeners could see this. Ready? Here we go. It's my family label.
I don't get it.
I don't understand.
The desert is 3 weeks in every direction.
Is this Marianne, Raiders of the Lost beautiful. Ark?
Thank you. Yes. Okay. You know how he gets
took me a second.
Thank you. He gets drunk and he's pouring, but it's not actually grappa. I'm sure listeners will know that what they were drinking was arak.
Yeah.
Which is also, it's gasoline.
Yeah.
And I've had that too.
I'd like to point out that we moved from talking about Axis and Allies to Vic role-playing as a Nazi collaborator.
He was a collaborator, wasn't he? He was terrible. Okay. So moving right along, but I just thought you'd appreciate my belloc. Oh, yes. So I, believe it or not, saw Trolls World Tour.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
Why? Your children are too old to need to see that.
My daughter. She wanted to see it. She loved the first one. I saw the second one. You know what? I kind of got sucked into it, I have to say. Sam Rockwell does a great voice, so
you,
by the way.
You paid $20 to rent it.
What was that?
You paid $20 to rent it.
Yeah, you know what? If it keeps the kids happy in this time of pandemic, it's just, that's a small price to pay.
If it buys you 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they don't have that. That's their vacation, whatever. And so, it was $20 for what? 48 hours, I think is what they said. None of you saw it?
No.
None of you saw it. Okay. So I guess only two of us saw it.
What?
This show has all sorts of surprises.
Hold on.
Trolls World Tour is a tour de force. Anna Kendrick is pitch perfect as Queen Poppy, and Justin Timberlake goes out on a limb as Branch. Limb, Branch.
Womp womp.
He's in love with her, but she isn't listening. I guess you could say they aren't quite in sync. I give Trolls World Tour 3 stars. Can't stop the feeling that I just watched one long music video, but the kids will be entertained. And that's the Critics Corner.
Gene.
It's a short out of review his quarantine. For a movie about short creatures. But speaking about being entertained, this spring is the 20th anniversary of Gladiator. That's it.
I get it. Are you not entertained?
I'm not entertained. But before I get there, do you have any? This is a new segment to the show now. Do you have any digital release thoughts? Like box office thoughts? Digital. release.
I do, thought. Actually.
Because I read the story about trolls and there's no numbers.
No, well, I can't remember if we talked about this last week, but I have several thoughts. The first and foremost of which is Universal released a statement today that was like, that said something like, this is the greatest performing Universal VOD release of all time. We're number one on all platforms. And I was like, this is worse than useless. This is a piece of information that is worse than useless.
Because there's no numbers.
There are no actual numbers. There's no actual money figure. It's just saying like, okay, well, this is done. This is the best. It's the best. But it doesn't actually mean anything. And this is the world in which we inhabit. Now somebody was trying to sell a like ComScore style service for VOD that would analyze the blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, this is a scam. This thing that they are trying to sell me is a scam, because I can look at the charts just as well as they can. And I can say, okay, $20 is more than $5. So like, the simple fact of the matter is that the studios don't have to give out any information. And because they do not have to give out any information, they will not give out any information. And if they will not give out any information other than like what we can see on Amazon and iTunes and the rest, we have no information. So basically we're all flying blind right now, and we all have to take the word of the studios, and anyone who believes a studio is a complete idiot and deserves to be shamed in public. In the square with a whipping.
In their defense, Thank you, Sonny. At least they didn't come up with a made-up metrics.
Like a Netflix. Metric,
like what Netflix does. So what Universal could have done if they wanted to be truly awful was said, we just set records by recording 472 million quality-adjusted viewing minutes. And then just like, mic drop, walked away. Because this is what Netflix does all the time. They just make up these quality adjusted viewing minute, or we have this many people who sat through at least 45 seconds. And
yeah, I think it's 2 minutes is the official.
So here's the thing. Do you think the studios are going to sort of like lean into this like Bill Belichick? You know, like with Belichick's injury reports are famously like, yeah, he's got a, you know, blah, 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 blah. And just like, we'll mumble away so that nobody is. Do you think they're going to like get into it? Because it used to be the old culture of Hollywood. Again, the pandemic changes everything. The old culture was like, everybody dick measures and like, this is our, here are our Friday estimates. This is, everyone wants to show how much money they've actually made. And now maybe post pandemic, everybody in Hollywood gets their jollies out of hiding how much money they're making.
Yeah, maybe. It will depend on how robust. So the real question is, what happens with the first big movie back, right? Let's say Tenet, which is still on the map at July 22nd or something like that.
Not going to happen.
Is the first big movie back.
Will not happen. There is no movie back.
Well, there has to be a movie back eventually. Theaters will open again.
JBL is movie theaters will never open ever again. Is that what you're saying?
I think it is possible that movie theaters will not open again. Yes.
I think that is unlikely. It's possible, I guess. I think that is unlikely. So eventually you will have a big movie back. And I'm putting my hand up here because I want to come back to this in a second. But eventually you will have a big movie back. Eventually movie theaters will open again and movies will come back. So the question is, what happens that first weekend? So let's say for the sake of argument that it's Tenet, which is the new Christopher Nolan movie, PG-13, big action movie, summer set piece. Everyone was probably guessing that it would gross around $100 million on its opening weekend, right?
Pre-pandemic.
Let's say it comes back and it grosses $20 million. Okay? Then the question becomes, well, how do you actually evaluate something like this? Well, you know, everyone would say, well, oh, we have to cut this some slack because it's the first movie back and theaters are only half full and people aren't going blah, 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 blah. And then the question becomes like, well, maybe we don't have to report these figures because maybe they're not useful because maybe, you know. And that is, I think, the point at which you will see studios really start to pull out of the system that they that they because they are essentially all agreed to this by a gentleman's agreement. It's not like any, there's no law requiring them to report their box office figures, right? Like, they can't lie about them. That would be a securities violation. But they also, there's no law that says you have to report your box office figures. Netflix does not report their box office figures, for instance. So following the lead of Netflix and having to adjust to the new reality of audience X, like the audience numbers simply just being much lower than they used to be, maybe the studios say, we're not going to report these numbers anymore. They're not useful right now. And if they stop reporting them, they will never start again. That's a thing I actually believe.
How does that make you feel, Sonny?
How does what make me feel?
The prospect of a world without any sort of box office data.
Sad. Because
it makes me crazy.
It makes me very sad. Well, I mean, look, Amazon broke half of me already by destroying Box Office Mojo. So by the fact that I don't have Box Office Mojo just to go to and flick through, you know, just kind of like to look at like random data points five times a day, which is literally something I would do. I have like broken the habit of being kind of obsessed with box office. So it still bums me out, but probably less than it would have like 9 months ago before Amazon killed Box Office Mojo.
Sonny, I have good news for you. I have a workaround. So when this inevitably happens, because there will be no box office data, I know how you can get a pretty good sense and approximation of what the numbers are.
Well, how?
You go onto this website, twitter.com.
And see what people are talking about?
You just pay attention to what people are talking about. And look, whatever they're trending, talking about on
trending
twitter.com,
category.
That will tell you. Like, for instance, if you go onto twitter.com, you know that Bookwise or Booksmart, or whatever that was Booksmart. A really huge movie. Yeah. Did insane business. I mean, it opened to $148 million,
which
is a lot for a small independent film. So anyway, you can, if this does inevitably happen, you can still get a sense.
I can look at the Google trends.
What's going on? Yes.
The n-grams.
Yeah, to see what the searches are for.
I go to Facebook for that. That's where I look. I check on Facebook. Sonny, so we
do you want to give us a big boy review of Gladiator?
We have a big boy review of Gladiator. What do you call it? I sent you guys the link because AMC was supposed to do this. What do you call these event things? That they
the Fathom events?
Fathom event. Yeah.
Well, was there a Fathom events for Gladiator? Was there supposed to be?
Yeah. 20 years ago.
Gladiator. Directed by Ridley Scott, starring Russell Crowe. It's about Maximus, a general in the Roman army who commands the respect of his men and is betrayed by Joaquin Phoenix.
Commodus.
Commodus. Betrayed. He's betrayed by Joaquin Phoenix, aka the Joker. Because Joaquin Phoenix really wants to be in charge of the empire, but the emperor says, no, I'm going to give it back to the people. And so he has Russell Crowe killed, or tries to have him killed. Russell Crowe gets away. He gets back to his vineyard. But it turns out his family's already been murdered. So he then becomes a slave and he has to fight in the gladiatorial arena, blah, blah, blah. Comes back to Rome and restores the Republic. Long story short, that was the end of the Roman Empire. It was a Republic after that.
Lasted just a couple hundred years.
So it was funny. That movie came out in 2000, I guess if it came out 20 years ago, so it came out now. It came out like 2 months before I was supposed to be done with my first class in Roman history, right? Like we had a Roman history course. And
is this in grade school or
no? This is in college. This is in college. So as the Roman history class was coming to an end, this movie comes out, and the professor was like, "This movie's ridiculous. This movie is absurd. Everything that happens in this movie is wrong." Commodus and Marcus Aurelius ruled together for like 10 years. Like this, there was no father-son antagonist. Anyway, the long story short here is the professor at the on the final had a bonus question. Was like, if you could name five inaccuracies in Gladiator, you get an extra point. Ooh. on your final exam. And I named like 15. I just kept listing them. I don't know. Yeah, I love this movie. It's great. As absurd as it is the like kind of. It's the last great modern sword and sandal movie. Like, there has been nothing else since this came out that even approached.
There have been
it.
Like spoofs or parodies of it, like in Hail Caesar.
There have been some spoofs and parodies. And like 300 would probably be the closest to this, but 300 is so stylized and doing such a specific thing that it's not really a sword and sandal movie. It's more of a comic book movie. So I don't know. I am a total sucker for this movie. I love it. I am like Ralphie Cifaretto from The Sopranos, who we will all remember, Jonathan, as you were a giant fan of The Sopranos.
best show ever on television.
As an enormous ever. Early adopter of HBO, you will remember this. Ralphie Cifaretto was a huge
Obsessed.
Fan of Gladiator. He would come
that Joey
on
Pants.
The set.
Yeah, no, Joey yeah. Pants. And he was swinging the ball and chain and he hits the bouncer.
Yeah, right in the eye. Yeah. No, I love this movie. I love this movie. And it was funny. I went to go. So I own it on DVD. It was one of like the first 10 DVDs that I bought, probably. It was one of the very early DVDs. And it's so old that it's a flipper.
Yep.
It's a flipper. So I got to the end of the first disc. I was like, I have to flip this thing over. What is this? The Dark Ages? What am I watching a LP? But it was great. I love it.
Yeah. I was going to say even today in 2020, and because it's on all the time still. And the question is, does it hold up?
Well, it's a weird movie. I had forgotten that the opening action sequence is basically shot like a Tony Scott action sequence, not a Ridley Scott action sequence, which is very interesting. I mean, it's shot with the kind of step
very
framing. The step framing, the like shuddering kind of affect, quick cuts, lots of motion, lots of movement, but it's not, I don't love that part of it. And I had forgotten and I was like, ah, crap. Is all of this movie like this? Have I forgotten? But no, the rest of it's actually very clean and very, very like pristinely shot and kind of situated and framed. So I'm enormously fond of this movie. And it's funny. It was also one of the movies with that had used some of the tricks that like that Titanic had used, like building a lot of the sets out of CGI.
Yeah.
And kind
yeah,
of,
there's a
and,
combination.
Yeah, so like all of the Colosseum shots were essentially like CGI'd the audience and the like buildings themselves, and some of that kind of is kind of obvious.
I'd say it's noticeable because the colors,
yeah,
are,
the
know,
color,
weird colors,
yeah, the
weird
color,
colors.
The color gratings aren't quite there.
Can I ask a question?
And the tiger.
What format were you guys watching it on when you rewatched it?
Well, it's in. I mean. Like it was
on DVD
enhanced for widescreen off of my DVD.
I watched the ultra high def version of it and it looks like $1 million.
Oh, really?
It really does not. I think it is a medium problem that you are having.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
If you look at the ultra high def version, which you can buy from Amazon or Vudu for $19.99, it looks like it came out yesterday.
Were you
streaming it in UHD or did you? Okay.
Yeah, streaming.
Wow.
Okay. Fantastic.
You know, there were certain scenes like in the Colosseum where they used matches. Do you remember this? The little people they did. So some of it's CGI and some of it is just miniatures. But you know, they're panning so fast that you can't tell. I JVL, you remember when you saw Gladiator for the first time?
I do. I think with you.
Yes, that is
we
right.
We saw it at the Cineplex Odeon.
Got it.
On Wisconsin Avenue.
That's right. I was going to say Van Ness, but I forgot what it was called. That's, Cineplex Odeon.
That's not the Uptown?
No. That's Uptown's not what we on Connecticut. Was on
we saw a press screening of it. The Allied press screening.
It was across from the flagship McDonald's, as we used to call it.
Formerly the last Roy Rogers in the Washington, D.C. area.
Wait. Where was the Cineplex Odeon? Because that has not been there for a long time. Right?
Van Ness in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think that's right. You it's go like, all like the across way the down the street from the Washington Ballet.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. You just pass the cathedral.
This is the best bit we've ever done on the show is talking about DC geography.
But do you remember how everybody was so excited to see this movie? And I can't remember why people were excited to see this movie. Just from the commercials.
Awesome.
Just from the commercials. I mean,
freaking great.
I mean, obviously, it's great after seeing it, but before it, people are like, oh, we got to see this movie.
So I got to say, I went and rewatched the trailer for it today.
Okay.
The trailer blows.
Oh.
The trailer's really bad. Why were people? Was it just Russell Crowe?
Russell Crowe, who we saw.
The TV spots. The TV spots are where the action was with the tiger.
Tiger. You see the tiger. People liked it. And it'd been a while since there was a good sword and sandal, as you say, Sonny. The other thing I was thinking about was Russell Crowe a big draw? He had done L.A. Confidential, right?
He had done L.A. Confidential, and he had been in Virtuosity, right? Oh, he was definitely like...
He was bursting onto the scene.
He was a known quantity. He was definitely a known quantity. I don't think he was... I would say this was his first big...
Big.
I don't know. L.A. Confidential, he was the star of L.A. Confidential. I mean...
Yeah, but this is the first time he was a movie star.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so great in this. Gosh, he's so great. Vic, I have a question for you.
Yes, JVL.
Of all of the gladiator sequences,
oh yes,
which is your favorite?
Okay.
Sonny, same question.
I would say second best and first best. Oh, this is so hard, JVL. Okay, that's what she said. Second one is he's still working his way up in the small arenas. And he's fighting. Yes, that's right. And there's one guy who's got the spear in the net. Remember this? And it's like never. Although, I mean, if you're good at it, you're great. Okay, if you got the net and you're good, great.
Save it. Save this bit. Move on.
Oh, really?
From that bit.
Okay. Yes. All right. I see. Come where back you're going. To that. I see. Okay. So, right before he says, "Are you not entertained?" Not only does he kill the guy multiple times with swords, he cuts his head off.
Yes.
It, like he does like a scissor action.
Scissor.
Yeah. The bad scissor action. And then the other one that I would say I like was the recreation of the Punic Wars.
Where they use the shields to upend the
because
chariot.
There is the African charioteer driver woman.
And well, she's the archer.
She's the archer.
She's the archer.
And then she got split. She got split in two. Wow. That was amazing. So, I mean, again, the quadrants, it was great. It worked its way up. It was almost anticlimactic in the end when he's there just fighting swords with Commodus.
I love that final fight with Commodus because there's like a truth to it, which is that strength will overcome lots and lots of flaws. And like what it comes down to at the end is that Commodus is just weaker. Than Maximus.
Physically weaker, yeah.
I mean, like, physically, like, at one point, Commodus just, like, he goes at him, and Maximus, like, grabs his arm and is like, no. And, like, that is, like, the end of that fight.
It was also very presumptuous of him to wear the white cape armor thing outfit for Commodus. You know, remember that? It was white.
Can I say something about the Joaquin Phoenix portrayal of Commodus?
Sure.
It strikes me almost like a perfect wrestling heel turn because his character generates so much heat that it's not like Hannibal Lecter or, you know, he's really, really bad and scary, but you're also kind of rooting for him. You know, it's not like Gary Oldman.
There's no redeeming quality.
Air Force One, where he still is Air Force. You know, he's Gary Oldman. Yeah. It's fun to watch him act. Mm-hmm. With Commodus, he's got the combination of simperingness with evilness. And Joaquin Phoenix does it always. You just want to watch him die. And it puts over that final fight because the audience wants to see him die so fucking badly by the time that moment comes that the fight is real catharsis.
Yeah.
And it's because of Phoenix's portrayal as one of the great heel turns in modern cinema history.
Yeah, well, it's not really a heel turn. He's just a heel.
Right. Right. Sorry.
He's just a heel.
I also like the battle with the Tigers and Titus of Gaul. They had to bring him out of retirement. Remember they brought him out? And he was about the size of my brother-in-law, the one from New Jersey, that brother-in-law.
There's a lot of there's a lot of scars on him. When you see him in 65 inches and ultra high definition, not only on a face, but like his belly and chest have scars everywhere.
We who are about to die salute you. Remember, he's it's great.
Sonny, what are your favorite? Because in a way, you could view Gladiator as like one of the great sports movies of all time. It's like Hoosiers. You started, you know, and the tournament starts in these little rinky-dink barn houses. Then you work your way up to like the big finals against Muncie.
Coliseum is Hinkle.
Now, what do you think, Sonny?
I don't. What's the question here?
Your favorite Gladiator sequence.
Well, the end.
Yours is the Commodus.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine is the first one, and I would like to tell you why. It's because of the big dude who becomes Maximus's friend, who is German or
who's
I don't know
Vienna.
Is he German?
He was definitely
French. Yeah,
he was definitely one of Arnold's stunt doubles at some point.
So they get into the arena and they're all shackled to a partner and his partner gets killed. And so he takes his sword and he cuts off the partner's hand. But then he starts swinging the chain around and he actually uses the hand at the end of the chain to like beat in the head one of the other bad guy gladiators. And that moment is the moment
I lost my mind.
Can we give a shout out to Jaimon Hanzu here? This is one of his first big roles. By the way, we forgot the insider.
It's
got to come after Gladiator.
The insider came out in 1999.
Oh, really?
This came out in 2000.
Wait, so does it go Insider, Beautiful Mind, then Gladiator?
No, Beautiful Mind was after Gladiator.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So we're going to do more rankings. Okay. And we are each going to rank a thing, as promised.
Oh, by the way, and I will say, and it's a great cast, you know, with lots of talented actors like Oliver Reed and Richard Harris. Richard Harris, you know, and anyway, very talented. Also, Connie Nielsen's there with the
talent. Come on.
I loved her. You know what? I like Connie Nielsen. You know, she was in The Devil's Advocate. I like Connie Nielsen. And then I saw her in Mission to Mars, and I said, that's it.
I have a question.
Yes, JVL.
Does Commodus actually fuck his sister or no?
He wants to. I don't know if he had done
it. Does he just want to, or does he actually
have relations there?
He wants to, but is it consummated?
No.
It's hinted at.
That's why she gets Maximus out of the prison.
Busy bee.
So before we get to our other rankings, I have a bonus ranking because I promise this is the show of rankings.
Okay.
And I have ranked Gladiator weapons.
Oh, we will see. All right.
From 1 to 10. And I will simply, I'm going to submit my entries to you and you can comment if you like. Number one.
Hold on. From least to best.
The weapon that you've
used.
You're
going to start with the best?
Yes.
No, start with the worst.
No.
Work our way up to the best.
No. That's not how I'm doing it.
Well, you're doing it wrong.
Number one, short sword and shield. Right? Victorino, they can't hear you if all you do is nod. You have to say yes.
I'm writing something. It's well balanced. It's well balanced, but it could. And if you're the average body, take the short sword and shield. I agree.
Number two, pike. Pike is really good. You can hold the guys at a distance.
But you know what? You can rush them.
Number three, a two-handed sword.
You got to be big.
Number four, axe. Number five, hammer. Number six, mace. No, you don't like the mace?
Mace would be like ball and chain, you mean?
No. Mace. Mace is the one without the ball and chain.
The ball on a stick.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
Number seven, a ball and chain.
If you could swing it, nobody's going to go near you. I'm telling you.
No, it takes so long to get an arc all the way. You're open and exposed for like 3 seconds each time.
The one from Lord of the Rings.
And if it gets wrapped up on somebody, you're done. You have nothing to do. Right?
Terrible weapon.
I don't know. I'm going to swing that thing. Don't come near me.
Number eight, a rock that you pick up off the ground, because you could always just use a rock.
that's how bad the bottom one is.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what the...
Number nine, a puppy. So if you get a puppy who's with you that could like attack and yip at the heels of the other gladiators, that would be helpful.
And number 10,
trident and net. Because let me tell you, the guy with the trident and the net dies first every fucking time.
Are you bleeping?
You don't want the trident and the net.
Family podcast. Are you bleeping?
No. We're not bleeping.
We're done. We're past that.
We're in a crisis. You know,
the other thing the quarantine has killed is the bleeping.
The thing about the spear and the net, I have to.
No, the trident. Remember the spear. The pike is okay. Because the problem with the trident is because of the three prongs, if somebody gets something stuck between the two of them, they can then maneuver it around. If it's just a spear or a pike, that's actually better. You don't want the prongs. The prongs are useless.
If your enemy was a giant like fish, the trident would be very good. Because that's where they got it from. And the net thing, okay, if you actually manage, because chances are you could probably miss or only hit part of them with the net. And sometimes the net, I believe, is weighted, right? The ends are weighted.
Sure, but you only get one. Right? And you got like 50 people running around, and you've got a net that you can only use once.
If it's just you versus somebody else, and you throw, if you happen to land it on that person perfectly, you better rush at him so fast while that person's disoriented. Like, what's it? What is this? And that's your only way to win with that. I will tell you this, JVL. This is very interesting. When I was in Germany, I visited a place that was a Roman ruin had been uncovered in Germany near Trier. And it was like a whole floor mosaic. And the mosaic was from the Colosseum. It was like a Colosseum mosaic. In Germany, and so it had pictures of different characters and wild animals from you know that time. And one had like a hyena, and this is a mosaic that was you know dusted off from 2,000 years. A hyena versus a soldier or a Roman guy, a gladiator with a glove handled sword. So the whole hand is covered.
Oh yes,
yeah, the sword glove.
Sword glove,
it's sword glove.
Yeah, well, it goes into right. You go. Yes. It's almost like you have a hook for a hand, but it's a short sword coming
that's
out of it.
Exactly right. Yeah, Sonny, you have lots of thoughts here. I can see.
No, the number one weapon is a Bolito.
King size
Bolito.
Bolito. You just sneak up behind.
You just
gotta
sneak up behind him and get it around their neck and start.
I'm glad. I'm glad
we're gonna come back. We're gonna come back to the Bolito
because there is one character. In this movie, who the gladiator Vic? Do you know what I'm talking about with the giant, the helmet that almost looks like a fisherman's hat, and it's got the and it's got like
that would be the only helmet that would fit me. Yeah.
But and so I always wondered what is the practicality of that helmet? What does that helmet do for you? And the answer is it protects against the Bolito.
Okay. You can't get it. You can't wrap around.
You can't get the Bolito over that guy's head.
No cartel guy sneaking up behind that guy. Tell you what. No. Although if he gets the Bolito around him, it'll still just crunch right through it.
By the way, JVL, I appreciated your answer for Sonny, which was king size. Well, any weapon king size. Mm. Okay,
this is the best show we've ever done.
Ever. It only gets better every week. You had other rankings you wanted, JVL?
So three rankings. Yeah. Okay. We're going to rank the rank gladiator movies. We're going to rank. Help me, because I've had too much sangria.
Ridley Scott movies.
Yeah. Ridley Scott movies, and we're going to rank Russell Crowe movies.
Yeah, sure.
I forget. Who's doing which? I'm doing Gladiator movies.
I have Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Sonny, why don't you go first?
All right. I'm going to rank these from number 5 to number 1. That's what I'm doing.
Good.
Okay. Good. Number 5 is the counselor, where the Bolito comes from. The counselor is the Cormac McCarthy script that he directed.
Well, I thought that was the John Grisham novel.
No, the counselor. The counselor is the bleakest, darkest movie that anyone has ever made. Right now, John Podhoretz is throwing his phone through a window because he hates this movie. I'm an enormous fan of this terribly, terribly bleak picture starring Michael F. Fassbender, about a lawyer who gets into a drug deal that goes wrong, and then he has sealed his fate just by being in it. It is absolutely 100% one of the like darkest, most terrible, most terrifying pictures that I've ever seen. JBL, I think you would actually really, really like it.
I've read the screenplay.
I think I love the screenplay.
I think you would really, that I could not watch the movie.
I think you would really enjoy the movie, knowing how much you hate seeing not bad things happen to bad people. Like if you don't mind seeing people get their comeuppance, this is the movie for you. That's all I'll say. Number four is, I'm doing this all from memory, so I've had a lot to drink. So give me 1 second here. Number four is, I will say, Gladiator, because that's what we're talking about right now. Number three is Black Hawk Down, which I consider to be one of the all-time great war movies.
The way Gladiator made Russell Crowe a star, that movie made Josh Hartnett a big star.
Exactly. Right. The best performance in that movie is Eric Bana, who plays Hoot, the special operator who gets in and out of Mogadishu. Absolutely 100% one of my favorite war movies, and a movie that every time I watch it, I just get angry and want to like go bomb a country just at random.
Orlando Bloom, another great role.
Orlando Bloom, also good. Number two is Alien, of course, which the trucker horror space movie that introduced us to the Xenomorph. And number one is Blade Runner, which I think is basically just a perfect movie, perfect dystopian sci-fi movie. I love it.
I like Blade Runner 2049 better.
Really? It's a controversial opinion, but it's simpler. It's easier to follow.
There you go. Also, there's good violence. Oh, that's totally scored across the quadrants. Think about that.
You love Anna de Armas.
Oh, she's fantastic.
And Mackenzie Davis.
Oh, all of the above. Great movie and understandable. Okay. Russell Crowe ranked. By the way, have you seen Russell Crowe today, like now? Did you see that awful photo of him talking to this woman at some coffee shop, and he has his hand inside his sweatpants, like scratching his butt, and he is enormous?
he's the fattiator.
He is a guy who loves to live life. He likes to drink his Foster and eat his kangaroo steaks and, you know, throw a shrimp on the Bobby.
Yeah.
And, well, you know,
look for that photo. You won't unsee that. Okay.
It's very funny. There was, I'm sorry to interrupt. There a few years back, there was a photo of the Mummy movie came out, and there was a photo of Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe together, and they're basically the same age. Right. And it's just striking to like see the two of them together, and it's like, okay, well, that's a man who has lived his life in a certain way and has like treated his body like a temple. And the thetans have been expunged, and he has reached OT 7 or 8 or whatever it is. and then you have a normal man. Russell Crowe is that normal man, and God bless us all. I wish we should all be that normal man and not the freak Scientologist.
Okay. So this is 5-1, like the Doors song. 5 is actually a tie, because I was just feeling silly, and it is A Beautiful Mind and Virtuosity. I saw Virtuosity in the theater. This was around 1995. There was nothing else to watch, and he was in it opposite Denzel Washington, and he was so over the top. I was like, and then I saw Beautiful Mind. I feel like when he did that role as Professor Nash,
yes,
it was almost
R.I.P.
Yes, it was like Jim Carrey-esque in terms of his really trying hard to be serious, even though he's already been serious. But I just thought it was a bit much. I also saw part of that movie on an airplane without sound.
Can I object to your capping on his performance in Virtuosity, because Virtuosity is a garbage movie.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie.
But he's magnetic.
It was early internet too.
He's absolutely magnetic in it. You can't take your eyes off of him. It was so clear in that movie that he was going to be a giant star.
But it was also super over the top. It was that is like one of those like over the top performances that you either really love or hate.
Okay. I loved it. Okay,
you're gonna hate my arrangement of this, JVL. Number four is The Insider. I like him. I was skeptical about him having gone from Gladiator to this role of Jeffrey Wigand, because they are two physically different species. But he did a pretty good job of chubbing it up, and as we all know now, he can do that. He has that power.
But except it was the exact opposite. He did Wigand and then Gladiator.
Oh, right. You pointed that out. What happened before? We're getting there. Okay, so it was after LA Confidential. Okay. You know who I like better in The Insider was Bruce McGill, and I know JVL agrees with me on that.
Yes.
Good. Yes. Okay. Duration is what killed that movie for me, although you and I saw that movie together.
At the Uptown, at the red carpet premiere with Al Pacino there in attendance.
That's right. Okay, number three. I like Cinderella Man. I know it's Ron Howard. It's schmaltzy, but I know. Look at Sonny. Look, you look like you just had a little bit of a gin ricky. Too much lime. Too much. I know it's schmaltzy. I liked it. Number two, L.A. Confidential. L.A. Confidential. That's the first time I think I remember. No, that's right. I was like, hey, that's the guy from Virtuosity. That's what happened when I saw L.A. Confidential. I was so wonderfully surprised by that movie. I don't think I had any expectations going in there. And why do I think I saw that with you as well?
We saw The Uptown together.
But it's a great movie. Okay. Unexpected twists and turns. It required me to think a little bit in the end because I'm like, wait, what? I thought this was like a hate crime or something. And then turns out that no, there's drug running. Okay. And number one, aren't you so glad I'm doing this ranking? Number one is Gladiator. He did not win the Academy Award for Best Actor for Gladiator. Is that right? But the movie won.
Correct. He won it for Beautiful Mind.
That's
classic
right.
Makeup award.
Well, he was nominated 3 years in a row for The Insider, right. Then Gladiator, then A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah. And then that was one where Elizabeth Taylor sort of strangely announced the winner was Gladiator, and she was kind of loopy. And then he ended up doing, and then I stopped seeing movies that he did. I think I saw Proof of Life.
Proof of Life. I love Proof of Life. Proof of Life was on like Showtime or something one summer, and I watched it about 37 times with Meg Ryan and David Caruso as his partner in the extraction game.
You know, I mean, because then you cannot compare to Russell Crowe in that movie if you're the husband.
Yeah.
You know?
And who's the great character actor who plays the husband who gets kidnapped?
That's what I mean. Blanking out is driving me crazy. Okay.
You guys are missing The Quick and the Dead.
Oh, yeah.
How can you leave that off? How can you leave 310 to Yuma off? This is...
I've never seen
David Morse. That's who I was thinking of. Ooh. David Morse.
Oh, David Morse, who's also actually a giant.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
He's a giant. I've never seen 310 to Yuma. I've never, you know...
What a terrible list.
You made a trash list.
Every movie I saw Russell Crowe in, all five.
He was in Man of Steel. He was Jor-El in Man of Steel. Come on.
Skip.
Come on. Man of Steel. The only good Superman movie.
I hope you enjoy that sound effect from my nose.
The only good Superman movie.
All right. We're running long. I'm going to rank Gladiator movies for you. Yeah, we are.
Oh boy!
Number five, Spartacus.
Disappoint the people.
It only feels like 2 hours. Oh, number five. So okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Number five, classic. No need to explain it. Number four, The Arena. Now, I mean, this is the 2001 exploitation flick that was created as a direct response. In a lot of ways, it's talking back to Gladiator, but with women. And it stars two Playboy playmates, one of whom was Karen McDougal. And it is a loose adaptation of a 1974 film of the same name, whose one-sheet poster was this.
Ah, I'm sold.
The tagline, for people who cannot see it, is Black Slave, White Slave, See Wild Women Fight to the Death. But it's okay because it's feminist.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
It's intersectional, really.
Number three, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, which is a Gladiator movie.
Sure.
Number two, Thor Ragnarok, also a Gladiator movie. The only Gladiator comedy on my list. And number one, Gladiator. All right.
I was, you know what I would have
thrown
in there?
So many rankings tonight.
I would have thrown in there any given Sunday.
My ranking, for the record, my ranking... My ranking was the best ranking. I'm just going to... let's rank the rankings. Rank number one.
Gladiator Weapons was, is number one.
Number one was my ranking. Number two, was JBL. And number three was Fix.
You know what? Metacritic or whatever it is. Cinema Score. They like my rankings. Cinderella. Love it. Okay. Right. Corrections, shout outs, anything else?
I have a correction.
JVL.
When we were discussing professional wrestling last week, we were talking about the WWE Network and how WWE had made the very brave move to junk their pay-per-view revenue stream in an attempt to pull in subscribers. And Sonny had said, you know, oh, and see, it's going great. And I said, yeah, I don't know. Is it? And it turns out, no.
So no, terrible decision
their
they made.
Break-even number, well, it may not have been a terrible decision. It may have been a decision that was going to, they had to make at some point. Maybe they made it too soon. Their break-even number is about 4 million subscribers. They only have 1.5 million several years into it. And so they are actually looking to somehow get back into a version of the pay-per-view model. And what it seems like they're going to do is try to convince ESPN Plus or somebody else to pay them for their big pay-per-views to broadcast on ESPN or whatever the ESPN pay service is.
Yeah.
This sounds like something that would have been much more achievable back when Disney had money, which is no longer the case because everybody, including Disney, is now getting killed by the pandemic. So,
yeah.
Correction.
Yeah. Right. Well, it was funny. I read that story like 2 days after we did the show. I was like, oh, it turns out I was wrong.
We didn't even talk about the
terrible
XFL.
Decision.
XFL RIP.
RIP.
Second time. Here's a question.
I know.
Did they play more games this time
than the last time?
I don't think so. I think they played more games the last time.
I think they played more games the last time because they canceled the season before the end of the season. There were still like two games left.
JVL, do you ever remember Keith Elias by any chance from New Jersey?
Yeah.
He was a local kid.
So do you know my Keith Elias story?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I do, from Princeton, right?
So Keith Elias went to Princeton, and for all I know, it was like the first Princeton football player in 20 years to be drafted and play in the NFL. He went and played for the Giants. And so he was, as you can imagine, an NFL player in the Ivy League, was the most dominant player in Ivy League football in like 30 years. I mean, he was just unstoppable. He was this like little white kid. Yeah, he's from Toms River. Okay. Just packed with muscles. And I remember walking down the street of Princeton's little, what's the name of the row with all of their little eating clubs? On
Nassau?
No. Yeah, maybe it's not. Anyway, the point is, it's the street with all the eating clubs are on.
Palmer Court. No.
And,
sorry. I didn't go to Princeton.
Tiger Inn, which was the jock eating club. Former quasi-member Michael Goldfarb, who was actually a stealth member, not a real member.
You can ask Ramesh.
No, Ramesh was cap and gown. I bet you anything Ramesh was cap and gown. So anyway, it is after some long night of partying, I have gone and had breakfast at one of the eating clubs. It is a Sunday morning, about 11 o'clock, and I am walking down the street back towards campus, and Keith Elias is standing out in the front yard of the Tiger Inn property. And he has two pitchers of beer, one in each hand, pitchers, and a cigar sticking out of his mouth. And he is standing with a coterie of people having a conversation, drinking from his beer, going back and forth, totally buck-ass naked. And I was just like, that guy is so drunk that it's 11 o'clock the next morning, and he's still drunk and still going. And it was amazing. It was one of the most.
And then he ended up in the XFL.
Then he ended up in the XFL.
Okay, that is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorino Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts. We are there. Leave a review, tell your friends. Until next time.
Mm.
So you know what I finally you probably do this, JVL. You shave your own head, or
yeah.
Does your wife help you with the back, or no? You just wing
I do it.
It
all,
you,
baby.
You use a mirror? Do you do a mirror?
I'm not going to tell you how I do it. It's amazing, and I'm very good at it.
Electric, or you,
and I don't have to talk to anybody else while I do it.
This is like in many ways, the pandemic is your dream come true.
Absolutely.
But everybody has to live in your nightmare world.
It is not.
This is
the worst thing that has ever happened.
The rest of civilization. So I got a Philips Norelco clipper. And so, I haven't done it yet because I'm just waiting. I want to do it outside. I'm not going to clog the drain.
You're going to love it. Do you know who actually convinced me to do it outside?
You're going to cut your hair outside and just let the hair blow into the wind?
They won't know about it. What else is it? You could sweep it, I guess, like they do in the store. But what am I going to do? I'm not going to do it in the bathroom.
Do you know who convinced me to shave my own head and to give that a try for the first time?
Boom.
Tom Donnelly, our friend.
I'm sure it's fine.